Greetings and welcome to the IOMSN Town Hall Discussions, Cultural Sensitivity in MS Nursing. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Ms. Jennifer Smirka.
Thank you, Manny. Good evening, everyone. On behalf of the IOMSN and as co-chair for this program, I'd like to welcome you to this evening's town hall discussion entitled Cultural Sensitivity in MS Nursing, presented by Tony Saldana King. As a reminder, these educational sessions will be recorded and are available as podcasts on the IOMSN website at www.iomsn.org. And we would like to acknowledge and show our appreciation to Novartis for supporting this project through an unrestricted educational grant. This evening, we will have Tony Saldana King present, so I would like to just introduce you and let you know a little bit about her. Tony Saldana King is a registered nurse. She has been since 1997 and actually began her MS career in 2005. She has worked at the University of Texas and currently actually is working at the Maxine Messenger MS Clinic for the last 4 years, where she collaborates with Dr. George Hutton and Dr. Victor Rivera. She also does help out at the County Hospital MS Clinic at the Ben Taub Hospital and has a working relationship as well with the Pediatric MS Clinic at Texas Children's Hospital. Please join me in welcoming Tony for this evening's meeting. Tony, I'm going to turn the meeting over to you now for your presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate the introduction. And thank you guys for taking the time to call in and listen. I'd like to talk today about multicultural diversity in nursing care. And I felt that I just wanted to share that we started to have a lot of diversity or a lot of cultures coming into our center. And then I started thinking, well, I started challenging myself and thinking that maybe we need to be a little bit accommodating and I need to learn how we need to assess the patients and as well as our healthcare provider. So I thought of some of the nursing challenges that we've had to face. And we've had the evolving disease process. A lot of times some of the disease processes may have started off maybe a little bit simple, and now they've seemed to grow very complex. And I'm not sure if that's due to some of the diagnostic interventions or the new diagnostic testing that we're able to find certain things. So nurses and healthcare professionals have had an evolving change in trying to develop new strategies and the new treatment options as well. I think back in 1992, where there were no treatment options and how we've evolved in the MS community to there were injectable medications and then IV medications available, and now there is an oral medication and still more to come with that. And with all three of these things, the disease process, the new treatment options, and diagnostic interventions, there comes a new challenge for nurses and the healthcare professionals, and that's cultural diversity in the healthcare. And not only do you see that in the healthcare, but also in the workplace. We're starting to see that in more schools. When I did a little bit more research into this subject, I started to notice that there were a lot of competencies in the workplace or in the healthcare setting. So we're starting to see more and more of that, which kind of brings us to our next point, that we, after some further research and looking, Madeline Leninger had, back in 1991, identified that there were three nursing decision and action modes to achieve culturally congruent care. And then she goes to step, proceeds to step a little bit further and has cultural preservation or maintenance, cultural care accommodation or negotiation, and her next and last theory is the cultural care repatterning or restructuring. And I think these were very, I guess, depending on when you were in nursing school, and if you were like me, Jen said that I had graduated some time ago, so we did not actually have this, but in speaking with some of the nursing students that have come through hospital, this is starting to be part of a growing process for them. And as I mentioned before, that a lot of these talks, or you know, some of the case studies that I'm presenting, happen to be about our in our practice. So I just wanted to kind of share again a lot of the words that have been interchangeable. You'll hear culture, ethnicity, or race. So I thought maybe we should define those. And starting with the next word, the first word, what is culture? Culture is defined as some beliefs, customs, rituals, attitudes, and languages. This can be taught or communicated, and it's constant or changing. And that brings us to the next slide. Is race a culture? Well, race is categorized as a group of people with similar or physical features or traits. And I kind of think back to when my husband and I first started dating, and he didn't quite know the differences that there were in some of the Latin countries. So he figured that here I have these, for most of you that know me, I have dark features, the dark skin, dark hair. And so my husband's friend brought over his wife, and she had dark hair and dark skin coloring. And he says, oh, you must also be Hispanic too. And she said, I am certainly not. I'm from Honduras. And so I told my husband, I said, you can't really categorize people by the way they look. And so that kind of, you know, got him to thinking about some of the cultural differences. And which leads us, and so in some of these cultures, they can also include various, in the races, this can include various cultures or ethnic groups. And that brings us to the ethnicity. It's a group of people that is defined as national origin or culture. And really, what does that mean? You might hear that question quite a bit if you're checking into the doctor's office, participating in a research study. A lot of you who do research probably have to check off what is your ethnicity. And it's, like my husband, he made the mistake of assuming. So you have to be very careful and ask patients nowadays. So what we mean about what type of ethnicity, it can be Hispanic American, African American, Asian American, Arabic or Middle Eastern American, or even Native American. And with these, I think that in each clinical practice that you probably should have an interpreter. And why is the importance of that? And that is to convey the message to the patient, what exactly is the message, or find out what is actually the problem that's happening with the patient. And that kind of gets a little tricky. Sometimes the institution, they're trying to figure out, are they responsible for this? And the answer is yes. They are responsible for providing an interpreter for the patient. Now, whether that be cultural or hearing impaired, the patient is still needs to have an interpreter present. And to have the interpreter, you may want to make sure as a healthcare professional or nurse that you always face the patient. So that way the patient feels that it's directed towards them, and you also have the interpreter kind of repeat what you're telling them so that they understand the message and that the wires don't get crossed. And I think it's always important just to learn a few of the phrase or greetings in the patient's language. Or, you know, do you shake their hand? Do you bow? In one of the Middle Eastern cultures, one of our friends, him and his wife had came across some of our other friends, and the one guy reached out or extended his hand to shake the man's wife's hand. And he says, I'm sorry, but it's a custom that my wife cannot touch another man. So we had to respect that. We didn't understand that, but that was something that we needed to kind of respect there. And that's why I say sometimes it's important to either learn some of the customs, and learning also the phrases or greeting means quite a bit to the patient, and that they're very happy about listening, you know, or just hearing their native tongue. And with that respect, I would just like to mention that sometimes we don't understand why, like I mentioned, but that we should understand that that is their culture, and just coming to visit here is not going to change that. So what does respecting their culture mean? That's why I also mentioned to ask the interpreter who they should address, because sometimes it may not be the patient that you're supposed to be addressing. Or, you should ask the patient themselves, you know, should I talk to you or who should I address? Or even a family member if that patient is not able to speak at that time. And the reason why I say that we should respect some of the cultures, we had an incident when I was working in the hospital that we had an Arabic patient that was intubated, and the wife and the son asked us to please kindly not to bathe the patient, because once again, that a woman was not supposed to touch a male Arabic man. And so with that, we obeyed that command, and they would come in and bathe the patient. But we just said to please let us know if there were any findings, to please let us know. Well, one of the nurses wasn't aware of that, or that didn't get passed on. And so that became an issue. The wife came in with her son, and they saw one of the nurses getting ready to bathe the patient. Oh, she had a big fit and was very upset, and rightfully so, because, once again, this is their culture, and they asked us to respect that. So because of that, we all had to have some culture sensitivity training. So that's why I just say that maybe we should kind of investigate and figure out some of the customs. And like I had mentioned before, when you ask who you should address, in the Indian, Arabic, or Middle Eastern culture, usually the husband or the father are the ones who are authorized to convey the problem. So usually that is directed to the spokesperson. Usually if it is a female that you are assessing as a healthcare provider or nurse, you usually ask permission to, if it's a male doctor or a physician's assistant or nurse touching or going to assess the female, they will have to ask permission. So if he says, the husband or father says no, then you have to not, and either have a female come in and see if they can assess for you. And in our practice, like I mentioned before, this is not stereotyping, but there are some of the cultures that we've observed in our practice, and we've also kind of done some research just to make sure that we're on the right group. And I also met with our international department at Methodist Hospital to kind of go over what we should do. And so they kind of gave me a few of these guidelines. And I was mentioning that we had two educated physicians here in the U.S., and they were of Indian descent, and they were born in India but studied here in the States. And the wife was the patient, and the husband did the talking, even though the wife was very well educated. Then after a few trips, I think that they felt comfortable, and then the husband allowed her to speak and to kind of discuss what was happening to her. But for the most part, the wife did not convey her message. It was her husband. And in the Hispanic culture, my husband makes fun about that. Well, I shouldn't say he makes fun about this, but he said when he was first dating me, he felt like he was dating my whole family, which, and sometimes some of the Hispanic cultures, when you do have some approach, when the patient comes in, they do bring their extended family, whether that be the son, the daughter, the husband, and maybe the son-in-law and daughter-in-law. So sometimes that can be a bit of a problem. So they can be, usually the folks that are part of the decision-making process are in the room, and that's usually how we try to help discourage so many patients in the room. We ask them who's going to be part of the decision-making process. So that way it kind of empowers the family and lets them kind of pick and choose so nobody's upset. And also some Hispanic families are very spiritual, and they also believe a lot in prayer and lighting candles to kind of aid with the healing process and reaching out to some of the saints to kind of help with the healing. And we noticed that in Hispanic culture that a lot of the women, and really actually a lot of the culture, is that the women seek care more often than the men. And there was one thing that was also mentioned, too, that if patients or Hispanic patients felt if they had cancer and that they were surgically opened up, that the cancer may tend to spread. So some of them were fearful of this. So this is why if they were diagnosed with cancer, they may opt to probably not have any type of intervention for that. Next, that brings us to the African-American culture. And with this culture, I believe the Tuskegee syphilis experiment may have promoted some distrust and apprehension to seek preventative care among some of the older generation of African Americans. And for some of you that do research, you may remember this. This is when the Tuskegee experiment in Alabama had about 600 impoverished African Americans that were sharecroppers in Alabama. About 400 of them contracted syphilis, and they were told that they would get free health care, which was misleading. And they said that they told the patients that they were being treated for bad blood at that time. And so they did not have any explanation or were not aware that there was a treatment that was available. And when penicillin was available for them to be treated, that they were... the study still lasted 40 years. And so some of the wives were affected, and then the children that were born were affected with syphilis. So it was kind of a sad thing, and I think that they, even though they had the penicillin, they kind of wanted to see what would happen with without treatment. And that's when the Institution of Review Board became born, that is known as the IRB, and it's really for the safety of the patient. And so I think with a lot of this background, sometimes that does make people a little bit apprehensive to some of the care. And African Americans, like Hispanic people, are very religious as well, and that their spirituality and their religion must be at one and kind of must be at peace. Also, communication is very important, whether it be African Americans or any culture. And next, that leads us to the Asian, Vietnamese, and Chinese culture. Some believe that Eastern medicine can help rather than Western medicine. And what is the Eastern medicine? Well, some of our friends and some patients, they spoke of, in some of the literature that I also checked with, they had things such as coining and cupping. Now, coining is where you have the oils and you take the coin to rub along the spine and maybe out toward the rib cage and making these markings. And what it's trying to do is trying to kind of move out all the negative or the bad energy and to kind of promote at least the alignment and to kind of promote healing. And this is supposed to kind of rid anything that you're kind of having, whether it be a cold or flu or aches. And the cupping part, I think they said in the older generation that they would put light a fire inside the cup and place it over the body part, creating a suction. And then it would have draw up the skin, and that was to promote some of the good blood, and that kind of helped take out some of the negativity or some of the ailments that you were having. And again, in this culture, most of the women seek care more often than the men. And when you do have a follow-up appointment, if it's an elder patient, we usually have the family member come along and the interpreter. And what happened was, for us, there was kind of an ethical dilemma. We were waiting on the interpreter, and the interpreter was a bit delayed, and the children said, oh, please, let's start. And when the patient came, they thought, oh, maybe she had MS, but they thought maybe she had a stroke. Well, it turned out she had a brain tumor, so she had cancer. And so we were, the doctor found himself in a dilemma because he conveyed this to the daughter and the son, and they said, oh, you know what, it would probably socially be acceptable that she knows that she had a stroke. That would be better than finding out she has cancer. So then that put, you know, our clinic kind of like an ethical dilemma, because the interpreter came and they said, we don't need the services. So, I mean, what do we do in that instance? So that was kind of a tough call. Eventually, the children finally told her what was happening, and they were able to get the care that they needed. And I think for the healthcare profession, for nursing and healthcare professionals, we really need to bridge the East and the West together, so we kind of have a joint help there. And lastly, the Romani folks are some patients or a group of patients that we have seen in our practice. And one of them, I said, well, what part of the country or world is that? And she says, mainly people, and this was her description, people would recognize us better if you called us gypsies. So I said, okay, sorry. But she mentioned that the father or the husband usually speak on the wife or the daughter's behalf, and that the men are encouraged to be educated, and the women are encouraged not to seek outside employment, or their primary focus is the family. And we found out that illiteracy is common among the women. And that was with one of our social workers. She had to fill out several forms, and, you know, if the husband, we really needed to explain that. So I wanted to also share with you that I've looked for the MS medications that were located outside the U.S., and so I've enclosed that on the website, so if you ever have some patients traveling over, you'll be able to find those. We did find out where, Avonex, the Copaxone, were located, Gilenya, Tysabri. Betaseron is located in Asian countries and outside in the Latin American countries and Europe, but it's known as Betaseron. So I didn't want us to look like we were not being fair balanced, but just did want to share with you that these were available, and I do have those. So once I receive more information, I'll be able to share that with you. And in summary, I really think that our job as nurses and healthcare professionals are really to break down the barriers to patient care and establish a rapport. And I'd really like to kind of help promote education in really any culture, maybe having some pictures in their language. Sometimes I know that can be kind of hard. But also understanding and maybe respecting their cultures and some of their wishes. When culturally diverse patients come to the office, we have to remember that this is a milestone. Like we said, most men that are of culture do not come in unless there's a real reason for them to do that. So I just wanted to kind of convey that we just really need to kind of put aside our differences and fill or kind of seek out what is their real problem. And I've also listed online some of the websites, which is currentnursing.com and culturaldiversity.org. And so that concludes our conversation for this evening, and I wanted to thank you all very much, and I hope that you guys will share some of your unique cultures that you may have encountered so the rest of us can learn as well. Thank you. Great.